This is Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable, an in-depth analysis and commentary on the stories making headlines in Pennsylvania this week. Each week, Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable examines issues that affect you, your family, and your community. And now, from the Harrisburg studios of the Radio Pennsylvania Network, here's your host, Brad Christman.
Welcome to Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable for this weekend of March 25th and 26th, 2017. On the show this week, you'll hear about the latest in driverless vehicle technology and find out how soon you might be able to hop into a fully automated car for your commute to work. And two top officials from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs update state lawmakers on efforts to help Pennsylvania's vets. But first, there was a special election in the 197th State House District in Philadelphia on Tuesday this week. This is the seat formerly held by Leslie Acosta, a corrupt lawmaker ousted over an embezzlement scheme. The district is overwhelmingly Democrat, but the only candidate on the ballot Tuesday was a Republican. That's because the Democrats' candidate was ruled ineligible due to living outside the district. Despite being the only candidate on the ballot, Lucinda Little garnered only single-digit percentages in the vote count. Write-ins dominated with over 90%. Now, there's actually nothing that unusual about those results given the Democratic lean in the 197th, but top Republicans back in Harrisburg say there were some unusual activities taking place in the polling places on Election Day, and they say it's an egregious violation of the election code. On Thursday, Philadelphia State Representative John Taylor and House Majority Leader Dave Reed outlined their accusations.
There was a special election in the 197th Legislative District. We in the Republican Party put forth a credible candidate by the name of Lucinda Little and put the resources that we could muster to try to win that election, despite the fact that we had overwhelmingly negative registration numbers in that area. But starting at 7 o'clock in the morning and moving on throughout the day, party veterans, volunteers, and people who have been through many, many elections were alarmed at the tactics that were going on at a good portion of the polling places in that district. And while the election was a special election called by the Speaker, in a situation where it was odd that there wasn't a candidate on a ballot, there was nothing special about being exempted from the Pennsylvania Election Code. So various volunteers, party people, reporters have made allegations of rampant illegalities at the polling place concerning voters in that election and their methods of using stamps in the course of pursuing a write-in candidate. We've had allegations of election fraud throughout the city over the years, but nothing that is documentable and something that you can see directly with your own eyes. And certainly a reporter has written about this already today on a Philadelphia paper. So I'm going to turn it over to the majority leader and the speaker, but I, among others, and our leaders are asking for the Attorney General to look into these allegations. I think any candidate has the right to have a fair election. The citizens of Philadelphia deserve such. We're asking the Attorney General to take a look at this situation. At this point, I'll ask Majority Leader Dave Reed to step up.
Thank you very much, John. Look, with the situation yesterday, with the special election in 197th District in the city of Philadelphia, and the reports and the documentation of the corruption and abuse related to that special election, we will be calling upon the Attorney General Josh Shapiro to formally launch an investigation into what exactly occurred during that special election process. We're doing so from two different perspectives. And let me just say first off, we're realistic. That's a 5% Republican district. We're under no pretense that we were going to win a special election with 5% registered Republicans. But it does beg the question, if this sort of corruption occurs in a special election with only 5% of Republicans registered in within that district, what occurs in more competitive elections throughout other polling places, throughout the city, and throughout the Commonwealth? We're asking the Attorney General to launch the investigation for two reasons. Number one, we've been impressed thus far with his approach to cleaning up the Attorney General's office from a corruption history from the last Attorney General. And number two, the other individual that would have jurisdiction in this case, the Philadelphia District Attorney, obviously has been indicted, ironically, yesterday on 21 different charges of corruption and bribery as well. So it seems appropriate that our new Attorney General be the person to launch such an investigation. We have more faith and confidence in him, given his stature and his approach to the Attorney General's office thus far, to give an impartial review of what exactly happened and hopefully take the correct legal action necessary to punish those involved and to ensure that we have an electoral process going forward that is above reproach. And our citizens, whether they be in 197th District, the City of Philadelphia, or the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, never have to question whether corruption is leading to the results of an electoral victory or not.
Now, when you hear Republicans talking about stamps, they're referring to ink stamps that are used to write in a candidate's name. That's not illegal in and of itself if it's an effort put forth by a campaign and outside the actual polling place. But Taylor and Reed say this wasn't just an innocuous campaign effort.
With the stamp question, just think about that for a second. You have the formal, impartial judge of elections handing out the stamp, telling them who to vote for when they're checking in to cast a ballot. That's not a poll worker outside. That's not somebody from either candidate outside of the polling place. That's the official nonpartisan judge of election in charge of operating the election from that day, handing out the stamp, telling them who to vote for when they go into the polling place. That's no different than handing out a card that says vote for X, Y, or Z. That's the judge of election. That's not a poll worker. That's not a volunteer. That's the official judge of election who's charged with maintaining order and the integrity of the electoral process. That's where the problem comes into play. None of those materials are appropriate to be within the polling place itself, let alone to be handed out by the judge of elections.
They were seeking signatures right at the outset of the voter approaching to ask for that assistance. And then the allegations also are that stamps supporting one candidate or another were actually being housed and presented at the table by the election officials, which is, again, certainly a violation of the election code.
As of Friday morning, there had been no response yet from the Office of Democrat Attorney General Josh Shapiro. We'll step aside for a couple minutes here, but coming up, how soon could you be riding in luxury in a fully automated car? You're listening to Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable. Dating back to the administration of Robert P. Casey, Radio PA's Ask the Governor program has connected you with your Commonwealth's governor. Governor Tom Wolf is the latest chief executive to answer your questions on Radio PA, as each month he joins us in studio to address the major issues affecting you, your family, and your community. In this era of political bickering and infighting, Radio PA's Ask the Governor is still a place for a lively but civil discussion of hot-button issues.
In any society, there are people who just want to yell at each other, but the folks who get things done are the folks who sit down and say, okay, we disagree. Let's figure out, you know, how we can actually work together.
You can be a part of our next program with Governor Tom Wolf by visiting pamatters.com and clicking on the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You can also email a question directly to askthegov@pamatters.com. That's askthegov, G-O-V, at pamatters.com. Send your question or comment today and be part of our next edition of Ask the Governor.
As an 18-year-old, I let my mistakes kind of take over my life. I was 0.5 credits away from completing high school, and I didn't do it.
10 years later, at age 28, Jackie finished her high school diploma.
When I found out that I was pregnant, I know that I had to do something for myself if I wanted to make her a better person and provide a better life for her. My family never stopped pushing for me to be better because they knew what I could become and who I could become as a person. My support team is amazing. The educational director, my sister, and even my 7-year-old daughter has just been more than the support that I could ask for. I've been given an opportunity, and I'm just thankful for it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable. I'm Brad Chrisman. You've probably heard quite a bit in the past year or two about driverless cars. Major research being conducted at Pittsburgh's Carnegie Mellon University has put Pennsylvania at something of the center of the driverless universe. This week, state lawmakers held one of the most comprehensive hearings on the technology to date, bringing together industry experts, researchers, regulatory gurus, and even law enforcement to help paint a picture of what the future will look like. The House and Senate Transportation Committees heard from Dr. Raj Rajkumar from Carnegie Mellon's Robotics Institute. He spoke about the push to get to what researchers call Level 5 in highly automated vehicle technology, also known as HAVs.
Automobiles are an integral part of our society and economy. Highly automated vehicle technologies are expected to yield major societal benefits. About 42,000 people died from automotive crashes in the U.S. last year, with 94% of these crashes attributable to human error. If vehicles drive themselves, they will not be distracted, and the number of crashes, injuries, and fatalities is expected to drop dramatically. Secondly, the average American commutes to and from work 51 minutes every workday, and we are simply stuck in traffic for about 35 hours per year on the average. If our vehicles can be self-driving, we can enjoy the benefits of a virtual chauffeur and be productive during our journeys. The elderly, often living alone, when they lose their driver's licenses, also lose their mobility options, independence, and their quality of life. There are also 1.5 million legally blind and more than 5 million physically disabled people in the U.S. who cannot drive. These highly disadvantaged groups will benefit significantly from being able to travel independently. Some of these benefits are many years away. However, highly automated vehicles will reduce the intensity of crashes and their negative outcomes sooner than many of us think. Carnegie Mellon University has been a birthplace of highly automated vehicles with work on campus dating back to the early 1980s. CMU and Pittsburgh have occupied a special place on this stage since then. Our team from CMU won the 2007 DARPA Urban Challenge. This global competition required vehicles without anybody in them to travel 60 miles in fewer than 6 hours, interacting with other fully autonomous and human-driven vehicles while following the rules of the road. The Society for Automotive Engineers, SAE in short, has defined 5 levels of degrees of automation. Level 0 is no automation. A human driver is responsible for all vehicle operations. Level 1 represents some driver assistance. Either acceleration or steering in specific driving context is performed by a driver assistant component in the car. Cruise control is an example of level 1 operations. Level 2 represents partial automation. Both steering and acceleration are performed by the vehicle in specific driving context. Adaptive cruise control with lane keeping on the highway is an example of this particular capability. The operator must explicitly intervene when necessary. Level 3 represents conditional automation. This vehicle drives itself completely in specific driving context, but the human is expected to intervene when called for. In other words, the human operator must be paying attention and be ready to grab control at any time. Level 4 represents high automation. The vehicle drives itself completely in particular driving context, even if the human is not paying attention. Level 5 is full automation. The vehicle can drive itself completely from the starting point to the destination on all roads and are under all environmental conditions that a normal licensed driver can handle. No human intervention or supervision is required.
So those are the five levels of automation in vehicles. But where are we now? Dr. Raj Kumar told lawmakers we've just passed level three. And he says level five, full automation, may be just a decade away.
My estimate, we are quite a few years away. I guess I like to say about 10 years or so. So I think full automation is quite a few years away because it turns out that driving is perhaps the most complex activity that most adults on the planet engage in. There's a continuous flow of huge volumes of information that we sense, and we're actually processing information, making decisions, and then using our limbs to turn the steering wheel and such. And then meanwhile, we actually use our intuition, common sense, when things happen that we have never ever seen before. So it's going to take quite some time for us to teach our computers, program the computers to basically do something similar. But at the same time, I guess the level three, level four technologies can actually begin to be deployed in the coming years. We already have high-end cars that can park themselves. We already have capabilities from Tesla, and then GM will have a capability called Super Cruise, where the vehicle can drive itself on the highways with a human paying attention. So I think we should be trying to facilitate further deployments like those and accumulate experience, and so that level five will be reached sooner rather than later.
Issues connected to driverless vehicles include regulatory control, law enforcement, exactly how do you pull one over, and cybersecurity, concerns that driverless vehicles could be weaponized. These are all issues we'll be hearing a lot about in the next decade or so as the technology continues to rapidly advance. And State Senator Mario Scavello pointed out one of the potentially huge benefits of the technology during this hearing.
I look this in the future to address the drunk driving problem. You know, honestly, you know, it's if this gets perfected, those type of accidents go away.
We'll break here, but in the next segment, an update on programs to help Pennsylvania's veterans. You're listening to Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to mooch off your friends.
You gonna finish that grape?
You mean the one in my mouth?
You don't need to stop buying the necessities.
What you're smelling is a natural musk.
Ew.
You don't need to be a medical test subject.
How do you feel?
Mostly okay. I... Sometimes, though.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman! Let's break for lunch.
You just need an internet connection. Don't get left behind. Start your personal savings plan with the tips and tools on feedthepig.org. That way, you don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
All right, deal.
Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but we got a lot of food in this country. A lot of peaches, a lot of corn, a lot of apples, a lot of everything. We've got so much food that we can't even eat it all. So if we got all this extra food, how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? I just don't get it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to the hungry kids who need it. They can get you food even if you live in Idaho or Alaska or somewhere crazy like that. This isn't complicated. We got extra food and we've got hungry kids. Feeding America's done the math. Now it's your turn. Support Feeding America in your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. I know you got internet on your phone, so what are you waiting for? We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable. I'm Brad Chrisman. The House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees came together this week for a joint hearing to get updates on veterans programs. State Adjutant General Anthony Morelli and top Deputy Adjutant General Eric Weller spoke to lawmakers about what's happening. Toward the end of this piece of audio, you'll also hear a question asked by House Veterans Affairs Chairman Stephen Barrar.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to present on behalf of Pennsylvania's 900,000 veterans. It is our great honor to represent them and advocate for them and do all the things. And the Senator Volakovich rattled off a list of accomplishments, and a lot of those, you know, are the marquee things, the when we talk about the millions of dollars that were able to be put into the pockets of those, especially the most needy of our veterans, and we talk about the nearly 1,500 veterans that reside in our homes, you know, that's really where the rubber meets the road of what we do. And I know the veterans groups behind me would acknowledge this as well. It's every dollar and every face and every name that gets touched throughout the Commonwealth. That you know, the people who are in most in need, that are asking or not even asking in some cases, that we go out and find and help. That's truly the accomplishments of this organization, the things that we do in the department, the things that are done by the Veterans Commission, all our veteran service organizations, all of the other private entities that all are out there to help veterans. And of course, with your help, we focus legislation in that direction. You support us with budgets, you support us with ideas and statute. So again, to those hundreds of thousands who were touched by the programs that we did, I thank you on behalf of all of them for what you do. That's truly the impact of what we do here today. I would also give General Weller a couple seconds just to make a few comments, and then we certainly look forward to your questions for today.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak with the committee. As you know, I began this job about 4 months ago, and some of my quick observations are the fact that we have a lot of dedicated employees in DMVA who look every day at ways that they can represent veterans in the best way possible. And as you know, Title 51 asks us to be the lead advocate for veterans in this state. As you also know, we just have slightly under 900,000 veterans. Approximately 50% who live in urban areas in the state and 50% who live in rural areas, which, you know, causes a problem and our concern for us, obviously, when it comes to outreach for those individuals. As you also know, veterans have a number of different problems when they come back from deployments overseas, whether it's injuries, visible injuries, invisible injuries, employment issues, so on and so forth. And we will do our best, or we've been trying to do our best, and we'll continue to do our best to connect with those individuals, people like General Corelli is referring to, that are coming back from deployments that may run into a few problems or issues there. Our primary tenets are to educate, create awareness, and create access, which is extremely important. Having just retired after 35 years of service, I found that when I was leaving the service, I said, you know, what do I need to know about, you know, Veterans Affairs? And I was told, look, just type in Veterans Affairs on the website and the information's out there. And unfortunately, there's just a myriad of information, thousands of pages. And so what we try to do at DMVA is provide a focus to people, give them, you know, one-stop shopping so that they can get to the information that they need in order to survive. As a result, the way we're organized right now is that we have a number of programs that we administer. The programs such as real estate tax exemption program, blind and paralyzed veterans program, and there's a number of other ones. We've administered those programs over the last year and had great success with that, and we're able to award over $5 million to those organizations. On top of that, we have an outreach program, which is extremely important, which involves veteran service officers and getting out, trying to meet people and tell them that they have benefits that are available to them that they're just absolutely not aware of. As such, we participated in over 150 events last year and were able to touch at least 3,000 people just by the outreach program. And as a result of the VSO program, we actually were able to file over 18,000 claims, which equated to, you know, over $120 million coming into the state of Pennsylvania, and most importantly, coming into the veterans. On top of that, we administer the state veterans homes. As you know, we have six homes, all of which are up and running under full license. They're vibrant organizations or vibrant homes. We house about anywhere between 1,350 and 1,400 residents per year. And as such, we're always looking for ways to try to increase those numbers. Believe me when I say that we're really attuned to the geographic issues. As I mentioned, You've got rural, you've got urban. Unfortunately, our homes do not hit every area of the state. And so we're actually looking outside of those six homes to partner with other organizations so that we can have placement for veterans while they're getting their benefits closer to their own homes. As a result of budget issues, as you're well aware, we've been spending an awful lot of time trying to figure out how we can economize, save money for the state, but at the same time, provide the same quality of care as we always have for state veterans. And as such, we have at least six studies going on right now, which we're hoping to implement in the next within the next 1 or 2 years. Sir, subject to your questions, that's all I have.
Chairman, you want to?
Yeah, if you're. General Weller, you're new on the job. I guess you're now, what, in your second or third month?
Just finished the third month.
Okay. Coming into a new job, I'm sure the first thing that you would do as the commander of is to go in and look at, you're to make an assessment and look at how we're doing.
Right.
In your assessment, how are we doing? Where can we improve? Where can we do better? What's your assessment of what we've done so far?
Well, I think what you've done so far is absolutely fantastic. I mean, as you know, though, there's always room for improvement with everything that you do. And that's the point I was trying to make to you on a daily basis. We're just out there always trying to figure out how we can improve our own job performance. But as far as the support that you all provide, I mean, I don't think that we could possibly ask for anything more.
We have come to the end of our show for this week. For all of us at the Radio Pennsylvania Network in Harrisburg, I'm Brad Chrisman. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week.
The opinions and views expressed by the hosts and guests of Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable do not necessarily reflect those of Radio Pennsylvania or its parent company, WITF Incorporated. If you have a question or comment about this week's program, send your email to roundtable@radiopa.com. Please include your full name, city or town, and a brief question or comment. Anonymous emails will not be read on the air. Due to the high volume of listener email, not all correspondence can be answered personally or on the air. Tune in to this same station again next week for another edition of Radio Pennsylvania Roundtable.
Dating back to the administration of Robert P. Casey, Radio PA's Ask the Governor program has connected you with your Commonwealth's governor. Governor Tom Wolf is the latest chief executive to answer your questions on Radio PA, as each month he joins us in studio to address the major issues affecting you, your family, and your community. In this era of political bickering and infighting, Radio PA's Ask the Governor is still a place for a lively but civil discussion of hot-button issues.
In any society, there are people who just want to yell at each other, but the folks who get things done are the folks who sit down and say, okay, we disagree. Let's figure out, you know, how we can actually work together.
You can be a part of our next program with Governor Tom Wolf by visiting pamatters.com and clicking on the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You can also email a question directly to askthegov@pamatters.com. That's askthegov, G-O-V, at pamatters.com. Send your question or comment today and be part of our next edition of Ask the Governor.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa, what happened to us? We used to be so much more active, but lately you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.